Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
If you want to make an entrance, bring the sabor with new Modelo Chelada Fresa Picante. A mouth-watering mix of authentic Mexican beer, bold strawberry flavor, and a hint of spice. With great taste bursting out of every can. So bring something sweet to your next barbecue or bring a little spice to Sunday's brunch. Bring refreshing strawberry flavor to any fiesta with new Modelo Chelada Fresa Picante. Bring the sabor. Drink responsibly. Modelo Chelada flavored beers. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
Oh, hell yeah. What's happening, everybody? Welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am back in Hollywood, California, here at the, what they call this thing, the Human Optimization Studio? I can't even say that. I've already taken my Alpha Brain. I've had an energy drink. I'm ready to kick ass. And before I kick ass, let me talk to you about some Onnit products. All right, I know you guys have been hearing me talk about all these amazing supplements I've been taking, but here's the deal. If you haven't already, you need to go get some for yourself at Onnit.com/Steve. When you go to Onnit.com/Steve, you not only get the best supplements on earth, you get 10% off. You save money and help keep this show free for everybody. Hey, but I know what some of you are thinking. Ah, shit, Steve. I'm already too smart as it is. I don't need that alpha brain. And my body is already a physical specimen like a redneck Adonis. I don't need to work out with that Shroom Tech Sport to lift those kettlebells. Well, that's all well and good, but if you're over 25, you need to boost your testosterone. So go to Onnit.com/Steve. You get 10% off one of the safest, healthiest, and most effective ways to help the body boost testosterone ever created. Right now by going to Onnit.com/Steve and putting some T-Plus in your cart. This stuff's going to make you feel like a damn teenager again. Now you can see how it works at Onnit.com/Steve, but you really need to feel what it does. You're going to put on muscle easier. You're going to have more energy and motivation than you can shake a stick at. And anything with two legs and tits you see walking by in your flagpole is going to be at full salute. I'm not kidding. And if it don't happen like that, you can get all your money back, no questions asked. So go to Onnit.com/Steve. That's Onnit.com/Steve. Get your 10% discount off T-Plus and your entire order and help support this show. That's Onnit.com/Steve. Be sure to put in the /Steve to get your discount. Ah. Boy, I tell you what, that was a damn mouthful. And with that being said, I want to welcome everybody to the Steve Austin Show and give a big thank you for downloading this son of a bitch. I'm in the studio today. I've been doing the one-man clusterfuck out of my house for too long. Came down to hang out with Mo in Hollywood. We're going to kick it. And today my guest is Tim White, former referee with WWE, one of my great friends from that organization, a guy who was in so many important matches with me. And I always have you guys send in questions and comments to questions@steveaustinshow.com, and many of them are referee-related. So I figured, hey, bring Tim in. He can answer the questions himself. Also, you guys got a kick when Bret the Hitman Hart was telling Andre's stories and Owen's stories the other week. So I figured, hey, Timmy White used to be responsible for helping Andre travel all over the world. He's got some great Andre stories, so I'm looking forward to having Tim on the show. And on a personal note, let me give you a little 411 of what I've been doing lately. We just got a new puppy dog, a silver lab. She's 13 weeks old, and that little motherfucker is shitting and pissing all over the house. So we've got to potty train that sumbitch ASAP, or I'm going to have to get some new carpet. And if I get new carpet, I'm probably going to go to Home Depot again to look around and get that carpet. And I was at Home Depot recently. You guys have been hearing my stories. Seems like I spend half my days at Home Depot. And again, I had to go down to the damn bathroom all the way across that motherfucker. Home Depot is probably one of the biggest damn stores I've ever been in. And once you go to the bathroom, you always have to wash your hands. I don't care if you're just pissing or you're taking a dump. You always got to wash your hands. And, you know, a lot of times people think, well, I just pissed. I don't need to wash my hands. My dick is clean, so I don't need to wash my hands. And I see these motherfuckers walk in and out of the bathroom and they don't wash your hands, Mo, and it gets on my nerves because you just handled your fucking prick, and then you're going to grab the door handle to get out of this motherfucker. So if you don't wash your hands, I got to grab the space where you just hold, you know, touched while touching your cock. So by proxy, I just touched your cock. I'm not down with that. So anyway, I'm in there doing my due diligence. I took a piss. I washed my hands. And here's the punchline of the story, or the point of the story. They have one of those electronic paper towel dispensers. Those motherfuckers, I don't know who invented this son of a bitch, but if I ever met the guy that invented the electronic paper towel dispenser, I'd like to kick that son of a bitch square in the balls as hard as I could. Because you wave your hands down there, and that son of a bitch give you about 8 inches worth of paper. And then you rip that off, and you go to wave your hands to get some more paper because you've only got enough paper to dry like 2 fingers. So I'm waving my fucking hands and waving them again and waving them in. I'm waving my hands in the air, waving them around like I just don't care, and this motherfucker won't give me no more paper. So there I am with about a 6-square-inch piece of paper to wash these hands are the size of baseball gloves, Mo. I need a little bit more of a paper towel to help a motherfucker out. Has this ever happened to you? Am I alone in this crisis?
No, it happens all the time. Even with the water, when you're washing your hands, sometimes the sensors just don't work. But normally they have those Airstream blowers, don't they? Or did they not have that?
Those Airstream blowers. Don't even get on. I hate the Airstream. If there's one thing I can't stand, it's an Airstream hand blow dryer. I can't stand those motherfuckers. Those are worse than the goddamn paper towel dispensers. I'll just wash my hands, and I'll just shake them a couple times, and then I'll just walk out. And then when someone wants to shake your hands, you can say, oh, dude, my hands are still wet because they got one of those gimmick things in there in the bathroom. So I hate those motherfuckers even worse.
Did you break it? Did you fist right through?
No, you know, I'm not going to commit any violent acts in there. But I just, you know, would like to, you know, wash my hands and, you know, dry them with a good old-fashioned paper towel. A paper towel, the manual kind, where you push that little ratchet lever down and it just throws out as much paper as you want. You know, I'm not going to, you know, break out enough paper, you know, to burn down through a sequoia forest or some shit like that. I just can't stand a motherfucking electronic dispenser when you keep waving your hands up in front of that motherfucker and it won't give you enough paper.
They have to create an automatic door opener, too, because there's that guy that goes in there who pisses and is like, I'm not going to wash my hands. And he just gets his piss hand all over the door handle, and all that washing you did was for nothing.
Oh, I know. That's why, you know, I'll go in there and I'll grab the sumbitch with my pointing finger and my thumb. And I'll grab at some at the top. I'll grab that handle at the most weird places so I can figure the fucking guy that didn't wash his hands after touching his grubby dick didn't touch that part of the handle. And I know other motherfuckers out there using my same strategy, but at least it makes me feel a little bit better about myself. And I always got my damn alcohol scrub and my Bronco and my Suburban, but I don't carry it around in my pocket. So you got to make sure that you're not you know, picking your nose, scratching your eyes, something like that, where those dick germs might get to you, one of your orifices. You know what I'm saying? Well, what else do I got, man? Hey, let's get to the word of the day. Word of the day. You know what the word of the day is, Damo?
No, I don't. What is it?
Today's word of the day is shithead. Shithead is the word of the day. What does shithead mean? I'll tell you. Shithead is an insulting term for a person that is ignorant, narrow-minded, cruel, and or unintelligent. It is generally considered to be a vulgar and profane term. Well, no shit. Today, I'll use it in a sentence. Today, I was driving in Los Angeles traffic, and there's a bunch of shitheads on the road. Mo, would you like to use shithead in a sentence?
I could use shithead in a sentence. Dwight Howard, who came to play for the Los Angeles Lakers and then decided to leave us for some Dallas team, is a big shithead.
Wow, you heard it here first on the Steve Austin Show. Mo said that Dwight Howard is a shithead. Well, be that as it may. Hey, one time a guy fired me from WCW. His name was Eric Bischoff. At the time he fired me over the phone, I thought he was a real shithead. I don't think he's a shithead anymore. Me and Eric Bischoff, we shook hands, and there's not a ounce of grief or heat between us. But back in the day, I thought he was a shithead for firing me. Turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me. But you know what? Fuck talking about me. Shithead's the word of the day. Let's move on. I want to welcome a good friend of mine to the show. Referee, former referee with the World Wrestling Entertainment, Mr. Timmy White. Tim, welcome to the show, brother.
Steve, I couldn't be more honored than to be with you again.
Well, I tell you what, you old rascal. We went through some damn wars back in the day.
We had some sidewinders, I know that. And I know what we went through. And I'll tell you, as I sit back and reflect, it was all great.
Hey, you know, I get a lot of wrestling questions on the show, Tim. And I put out a tweet about you being on the show, and if you had any questions, to send them over to the address that I provide, questions@steveaustinshow.com. There's many questions I'm going to ask you. We're not going to get to all of them. I know that you also were responsible for traveling. You and Arnie Skolin, who traveled with Andre the Giant first, and then you took over those duties. So Bret the Hitman Hart was on the show a couple of weeks ago. He told a couple of stories, and those got over real big. I thought you might drop a couple of Andre the Giant stories on us that you guys had while y'all were traveling.
I'd be glad to, and I have to say this, and you know how the business works, and I've been in it 32 years, and Arnie Skolin was like my dad, and Andre was like my big brother, and I was able to roll through life in that business and have just unbelievable times, because those guys were the greatest, and they took care of me, and I took care of them, and that's the way it went.
Yeah, we're going to remember all the positive, good stuff, you know, about Andre. Man, I met Andre.
I loved Andre. You know what? When I first met Andre, he threw me out of the locker room.
But hey, I want to get to that in just a second. I want to ask you, first of all, let's talk about you for a second, because you were a referee in the business. How long did your in-ring career last?
I think, Steve, because I'm really foggy on that, because I got hurt and then I came back and I came about 16 years, I think.
Okay, so what possessed you, Tim, to get in the business of professional wrestling? Were you a fan of the business growing up? You're from the Boston area.
Never went to a match, ever.
Are you kidding me?
Not that I watched on TV, but I wasn't a huge fan. And when I was in college, I played baseball, and one of my best friends in the world to this day, Ed Cohen, we played baseball together in college, and the McMahons owned the Cape Cod Coliseum back in the day when it was all territories. And I was boxing a little bit just to stay in shape, and he called me, said, there's a boxing show down here tonight, and I went down, I met Vince, and off I went. But I think the fact that I was not a fan. He wanted to teach me the business, and that's what happened.
So why did he gravitate towards you just to want to teach you the business? You guys seem like you hit it off pretty good. If you've not really a fan of the business.
Steve, it was unbelievable. If we just hit it off. And he asked me to name five professional wrestlers. I could only come up with three. And I said to Vince, no disrespect, believe me.
Name,
you guys are great, and
name the three professional wrestlers you were able to name.
Bruno Sammartino, Chief J Strongbow, and Andre the Giant, believe it or not.
Well, those are three great ones. Let's talk about refereeing a little bit. People ask me all the time, what is the role of a referee in a match, and does a referee really matter? And I say, oh, my God. I mean, a referee in a professional wrestling match is, man, they're in. I mean, that they can make or break a match. They're enforcing the rules. You know, there's good versus evil. They're enforcing the rules. You know, sometimes there's the distractions that happen. Referees help communicate signals sometimes. Back when I was breaking in a USWA in Tennessee, when we were working in Nashville Fairgrounds, you know, the dressing rooms were on different ends of the building. So if I was working babyface, here comes Frank Morrell, and he'd say, he'd give me the finish. And that's all he'd give me. And, of course, you know, it came from the other dressing room where Jarrett's were at. And so, you know, they deliver messages. But first and foremost, man, I mean, those guys are out there enforcing the rules. They're part of the storyline. You know, sometimes we're going to have some bumps and stuff involved. Once you started training in the ring, Tim, you know, in wrestling, it takes a couple of years for a wrestler to really get good, get his chops up. How did you adapt? Who broke you in as far as your training?
Well, I have to tell you, Chief J. One day he came to me, and when I first started in the business, and like I said, I had no idea. I was greener than the Jolly Green Giant. I had no idea. And when I started, I was doing the concessions, selling the T-shirts and programs and whatever. And things rolled along. Chief said, you know, you're about the right height, and you're in good shape and all that, and why don't you come get in the ring? And he guided me along.
So how long did it take you, Tim, before you thought you were a very accomplished referee?
Well, that was a couple of years because I was green as hell. And a quick story, the chief, I did it. He was running the shows and handling the business up front, but he was still in the ring. And I'd do his matches, but he talked me through them. And like I said, I was just learning. And back in those days, that's how you learned. You went on the road and just did it. And then he finally gave me a match when he wasn't in the ring and was with Rocky Johnson. And it was a curtain call. And Rocky, man, I'll never forget it because I was so green. I didn't know what I really was doing yet. And I got in the ring, and I forgot who he was wrestling, but he did some finishes, 1, 2. And he goes, no, you got to count on the other side. And I got up and counted on the other side. I mean, he worked me, and all the boys had a good time laughing at me, but I showed up the next day, and I kept learning. And it's a learning process, just like anyone that starts in the wrestling business.
Hey, man, there's a real art to staying the fuck out of the way. I find that, you know, the few times I refereed matches, it's hard for me because, you know, I really technically didn't know the rules. I mean, you know, 5 count in the corner or 10 count if they're out, you know, on a melee beside the, you know, the ring.
Absolutely.
But staying out of the way
just
is an
out
art
of the
form.
Way, be there for your spots. Remember your finish. Don't screw up the finish. These guys just put on a great show. And if you screw up the finish, just go home.
Did you ever get in the way of a high spot and trip somebody up?
Yes.
What do you do at that point? Did they eat your ass out?
Well, when I got back, we did. No one's perfect, and there's the spots, and get out of the way. No one paid to see the referee or anything, but the highest spots are the false finishes, and that 1, 2 can take people right out of their seats. I used to time, because I knew the match, I used to time 2 steps away instead of being right there on the scene. So it's 1, 2, and it's like a dud. You'd have to see the referee in action finally and swing around and get in there. So it's almost like 1, 2, oh, not today. I mean, that's theater. That's the business. We're in the business of show business, and it's a physical show. And I paid the price for that, and everybody else that's ever been in the business.
Let's talk about the art of I call it the 2 3/4 kick out, and it's all about timing. And you and me were always on the same page. And with Earl Hammer and a lot of guys
connection.
Had. Hang on, a lot of guys. You know, once you go for that cover. And it's a 1, 2, and then right before that hand hits the mat for that 3 count, you've got to kick out. What's going on through a referee's mind when you're 2 different scenarios. You're in there with 2 badass hands, and you know there's going to be that kick out because you know the finish, versus being in there with 2 greenhorns, and all of a sudden you're coming down with that third count, and you're thinking, God damn it, I hope these motherfuckers kick out, or I'm fixing to count them out.
God damn. And they used to. And they used to cut it too close, and I would tell them, don't cut it that close anymore, or I'm coming. I'm hitting three, and the match is over. I mean, come on.
There's
one, two. It's a good timing thing, and as a referee, it's a three-way dance in the ring. You know that.
It's all about.
And everyone has.
It's all about timing, and if there's one thing I couldn't stand was seeing a referee having to break his count or slow that one down, or many guys, as a safety precaution, would slide that other. If he was counting with his right hand, he'd slide that left hand underneath. The pin guy's shoulders and kind of create a little distance just so he could seemingly say, oh, his shoulder blades were off the mat just to save the match. Once you break the credibility and in the middle of a hellacious match, you have really lost that crowd, because when you lose credibility and people were buying in and believing, you've fucked everything up. And not the referee, but the two wrestlers have, because they've fucked the referee.
And the referee always took the heat. I agree. When in tag team matches, or they draw you away, and like it's too long, you can hear the guy hitting behind you, or something's going on, and you look stupid. They you're standing there, and come on. So that kills. If they had a 12-minute match at 10 minutes and 40 seconds, they kill the match by doing a stupid spot. Do the spot and get out of there.
Let's talk about heat going to the referee. So many times, you want to use those referees correctly. And, say if it's a tag match and one guy's drawing a referee and trying to, get a little heat on the baby face. And the heat should go to the heel tag team. But if they're burying that referee, if they've got him too long and all the shit's going on and the whole crowd's in on it, it totally fucks the matchup for the heels and puts egg on the referee face. And so then again, referee has lost credibility due to the fact that the guys are abusing him.
That's absolutely true. And it takes the air right out of the balloon. And when I was in my early days, boys were the boys. So I was kind of hesitant to say something like, you're burying me out there. That's a shitty spot. And that kills your match. But like you said, the green guys, they didn't know, but I was learning quick. God damn, get out of there. If you're going to do a heat spot, do it and get out. And then, move on. Finish the match. Keep the pace of the match going, and let's go to the finish. Let's make it a roller coaster ride. As a referee, God damn, I know I'm not in the match, but you're there for certain spots, and the false finishes, one, two, and like I said, I paced myself because I knew what the match was, and so I would never be right there. I'd have to come around and hit the two count, and it was a roller coaster ride and take people right out of their seat. It meant something, but you can screw that up. And if you screw up a finish after the guys work 10, 15 minutes, setting up a match and climbing the ladder, and then you screw it up, it's unbelievable.
Let's talk about ref bumps, Timmy. Sometimes referees got to go down so some business can happen. How many times you been freight train taking a bump?
Well, Steve, I had 9 surgeries as a referee.
And, 9 surgeries as a referee, and you guys are just the out referee. There just calling the match. 9 surgeries. Yep. Pretty yep. damn physical head, job.
But, yeah, you know what? Some guys, we screw up sometimes, and everyone does. You never know when you're hurt. It's a physical show. You know that. I'm not telling you anything. But I took it, and I came back. But that Hell in the Cell match with Triple H and Jericho, pretty much finished up by my shoulder, I can, it's bad.
So, hey, you've seen some bad stuff in the ring, and you and I were talking yesterday, and when I was working with Owen in New Jersey, I was 97, whatever it was, I got dropped on my head, and Earl Hebner was my referee in that match, but once I got dropped on my head and I called an audible, and I relayed that through Earl, I said, tell him roll up for the win, and that's what we did. and that was the referee relaying a message. But you and Jimmy Corderas came down to that ring to try to help get me to my feet so I could walk around a little bit. And when I watched that match back, and you guys picked me up, and then I'm trying to be independent and walk on my own, and I can barely do it. The lights are on, but nobody's home. When you guys were in back and I took that pile driver, what was going through your mind?
I knew it went bad. I've watched enough matches. I said that I was on my way to the ring before they even said go. I knew you were hurt. You know what? The match is over. Here's the thing about referees. Not only are we putting on the show, we're also there for the safety for everybody in the ring. I remember stopping in an Eddie Guerrero match, and he was pissed. And God bless Eddie. I loved Eddie. He pulled his hamstring just doing crossing the ropes. And I could see him pull up, and I knew he was hurt. But stop the match, okay? It's a show. Why would you ever hurt somebody forever and let it go on, you know?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of things that go on in that ring. You know, safety is first and foremost, but, you know, accidents happen. You know, it is what it is. What's the worst injury you've seen in a ring firsthand while you were in the ring working?
Boy, that's a good question because I saw many, but I think the first time that Edge broke his neck, I was in the ring and he was with Kurt Angle, I believe, and he didn't know he broke his neck, but I could tell it was just bad. It was really bad. And again, the match was over anyway, and I was really concerned. And when he went out, then I find out a few days later that he had broken his neck. So I just received a call from the office the other day because I guess it's the 20th anniversary of Hell in the Cell with Mick Foley and Undertaker. And they asked me about my feelings on that. I said, my heart was racing through that whole match. I just, those Hell in the Cell were brutal. These freaking guys just kill each other. It's a pay-per-view. And, man, I tell you.
Hey, what were you thinking when you were refereeing that Hell in the Cell match?
Yeah.
Hey, what did you think when the cage broke and Mick went through that thing and basically almost he landed on his head and that cage wasn't supposed to give way? He wasn't supposed to hit the ring.
I tell you what, right now, after he threw him off the top through the table and all that, and you know how Foley is. I mean, this is unbelievable. And Undertaker comes back into the ring and he says to me, go see if he's breathing. That was the exact words. See if he's breathing.
So
and when I get over to Foley, he had a tooth up through his nose. He was bleeding from his ears. And then Foley goes, where are the tacks for the finish?
Jesus.
I said, what are you? Are you crazy? He goes, get the tacks. I'm going, oh, my God. So, as a referee, you relay messages back and forth. If the guy's hurt, we're done. If it's not, we keep him rolling. And that was just unbelievable.
Mick is one of the toughest human beings to ever get in the ring. And, you know, after they went through all that brutality that you just described, I was working with Kane in the first blood match in the main event. And, you know, they had stolen the show. We had to follow that. And Mick had to run down and take a stunner from me after all the brutality that he'd been through. But one of the other things that, you know, you guys do, like you said, when you went down to check on Mick, you know, a lot of times when a guy's down, that referee will sidle up to him and just kind of on the sly say, hey, man, you know, squeeze my hand. We call it giving the office. Or give me the Iggy.
Yeah.
You know, squeeze my hand if you're okay.
If you're okay, we'll keep rolling.
Yep, get a little squeeze back, and everything's rocking and rolling. And I'm going to take a break right now. I want to come back. I want to ask you some questions that some readers sent in to the Steve Austin Show, and then we'll move on down the road, and we'll tell a few Andre the Giant stories. Talking with referee Timmy Wyatt, my old buddy from Days in the WWE. We're coming right back after this. Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com. Get a quote and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Welcome to the Steve Austin Show.
Buddy from my WWE days, referee Timmy White, talking about what it takes to be a referee, what goes on in the ring. Sometimes disaster strikes, and what does the referee do? Well, we'll come back more with Tim right after I tell you a little bit about some Amazon. Hey, if you guys are looking to buy something online and want to support the Steve Austin Show, here's what you got to do. Go to podcastone.com and click on the Amazon banner on the Steve Austin Show page. Look for the Amazon link. Doing that gets you to the same Amazon place you normally go, but with a bonus. Amazon kicks back a small percentage of the sale to help support the show. That means more Steve and fewer ads to pay for doing this. Hey, and on another note, you can also go to my website, BrokenSkullRanch.com, and click on that same Amazon link. That is still supporting the Steve Austin Show. Help keep this show free for everybody. And while I'm flapping my gums about all this, you can follow my dumb ass at Steve Austin BSR on Twitter. Now, we've been talking to referee Timmy White. Tell him about some old war stories, some bad things that happened in the ring. And I put out some questions, and people responded with some things they wanted to know. And Tim, I got a question here from Graham. And I know you've refereed a shit pile of matches, but what was your favorite match to referee?
I refereed so many. That's a tough question.
But just throw a top one out there.
The favorite match I ever refereed was the only one I refereed with Andre the Giant.
Which one was that?
We were in Europe, and back in the day, and Andre and I traveled together, so that was not going to happen in the internet. But this is back in the day. There was no cable or YouTube or anything else like that. But Andre finally, when we were in a tour in Italy or France, I don't remember, he goes, "Boss, I want you to referee my match." And that was my favorite match of all time.
Hey, here's a question from Danny over in Ireland. This show goes all over the place, folks. As a referee, have you ever found yourself in a situation where both wrestlers are working stiff and you're worried it might get out of hand and too personal?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's some guys, and you know, it's a co-op business, and I've been involved in those, and the only thing I could tell them was, let's do business and take it to the back, because, you know, we have a job. If you continue this way and you screw it up, then you might not have a job.
You know, it's funny when you guys in the ring. One time we'd been over there, and it was the usual 2 week tour. We'd go a week in England and then a week in Germany, back to back, whichever country was first.
Right.
I don't remember, but you know, on about day 10, guys are pretty hammered. We've been, you know, I've been drinking pretty much, and we're working our ass off. And I was out there working with Big Boss Man, whose real name was Ray Traylor, and Ray was one of the biggest sweethearts who ever was in the business. And he had a good left hand. He could knock a dog shit out of you. And Ray was a little off that night. And he lit me up with about 6 or 7 potatoes during the course of that match. And I was always very patient. When a guy was, you know, a little bit snug with me, you know, it took me a long time to send back that receipt. And finally, after about number 7, I looked over at Earl, and Earl kind of had that shit-eating grin on his face. And I looked at him, and he knew that I was about to go ahead and send one back. And I sent old Ray in, and I just grabbed him by his arm, and I said, "Watch the clothesline." And old Ray hit the ropes, and here he comes running back across the ring, and I didn't hit that sumbitch with a clothesline. I balled up my fist on my right arm, and I hit that sumbitch square in the forehead as hard as I could with my forearm and knocked him down to his knees, and is like almost just like a cartoon on a Saturday morning. You could see the stars over his head. And he knew what was up. He had lit my ass up, and I gave him a big-ass receipt. And he just looked at me, and, you know, he was such a sweetheart, and he was a big guy, and he just looked at me with a smile on his face, and he goes,
"Let me tell you something, I love that guy."
I know, but he just looked at me, and he goes, "Okay, and he got it. And he didn't touch me for the rest of the damn match. And that was just a classic story from a sweetheart in the business.
Yeah, and Ray was, and man, God bless him. And Buddy hit you a couple times too many potatoes. How many? You know what? I'm not here to have a potato dinner. Come on, cut it out.
Hey, here's a question from Jeff. What makes a ref really good? What are certain aspects that it takes to make a ref good?
Well, again, I was very thorough. I'd go through the matches with the guys over and over again. And my timing, because it's a show, the matches, it's like a slow burn. And then you bring it towards that finish. And that's the false finishes and the finish have to be just right. And like I said, I went over the matches so I know what I'm doing. And I know what the finish is. So I time all the matches, all the moves, to where it's like really like, oh, no, one, two, not today. And everyone jump out of their seats. You just got to know how to work, and you have to dance with the guys in the ring and have a great timing.
But in my opinion, what also makes a ref good, I mean, a good referee has to have good fire. Because after so many times, when you're breaking up that heel off of that baby face, and sometimes that heel gets a little bit physical with that referee, and Nature Boy Ric Flair always used to like to use the push spot. But even in just after that five count in the corner to get a guy off, you have to have fire, and sometimes you have to jump down that baby that heel's ass and show his ass out. So you've got to have fire, but you've also got to establish credibility. You've got to be very constant. A referee has to get over just like a wrestler does. And it's to a different degree, but you can know, like certain guys who go to the ring, oh, this is a heel referee. Oh, I love this guy because he always calls him down the middle. But you've got to have fire, and you've got to have presence, and you've got to enforce the rules of the story that's being told. And you've got to make those two counts, those three counts, all those false finishes, the timing has to be there. And also to keep those guys from burying you and putting the heat on you.
Yeah, and I learned as I went through. And believe me, no one had, if you go back and watch any matches I did, I had fire in my eyes when I would back a heel back up. I would fight for the thing. So it as people would watch, said he's fired up. He's really enforcing the rules. This is the way it should be. That's what a referee's supposed to do. And I take a little pride in myself for that, because no one had more fire than I did. You talk about the push spot with Ric Flair for about 4 years. I did the 3 years at least. I did the push spot with Triple H. And I'm telling you, it took down. I mean, I knocked him on his ass. I got in his face, and the fire was there. So there's the, and then he cowered back because I mean it's business, and it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect.
And that's when it's that goes back to like a Triple H, who was certainly influenced heavily by Ric Flair, as was so many people, as was I. But it is that reaction to what the referee is given him, which, amplifies the spot. And it's that give and take, and that's that working dynamic that the referee brings to that match. Fire and credibility, consistency, and a steady count. Hey, man, let's shift gears. And Bret Hart was on here a few weeks ago, and he talked about a few Andre stories. And you were one of the guys that traveled with Andre. And how was it that you first met Andre?
Well, I just started in the business, and like I mentioned earlier, I was just selling the merchandise and whatnot. And Chief Jay came to me and said, "I need some copies of the card." So I ran up to the office, and they made copies. And I went down that, but I'm part of the gang now. But this is way back. And no one went in that locker room except for the guys. So I walked right in looking for Chief to give him the copies. And there's Andre sitting there playing cards. I think it was Tito Santana or somebody. I walked in. I said, "This is Chief here." And he goes, "Get out." I said, because I thought it was privilege. I'm part of the company now.
Right.
I said, "But I'm looking for the chief." And he started to stand up. He said, "I told you to get out." And I was scared to death. So I ran out of the locker room. And I said to the chief, I saw him in the hallway, I said, "Why is Andre?" So he goes, "That lock, you don't go in the locker room. When I ask you for something, you stay out here and we'll take care of business out in the hallway. You don't go in the locker room." And he scared the death out of me. He really did.
How revered by the boys was Andre back in the day?
Probably more than anyone I've ever seen in the business. And let me tell you, the wrestling business was his life. That locker room was his home. He loved everybody in there, unless they were taking a shortcut or a cheap angle in the business. He knew who he liked. He knew who he didn't like. And if they were they weren't good guys or whatever their problems were, and they didn't respect the business, they knew never to walk in his locker room.
How was it that you started traveling with Andre the Giant? Because I know Arne Skolin traveled with him for years. And then what brought you into that picture?
Well, it was Arne. And I love Arne, like a second dad. Like I said, I was just selling the merchandise and whatnot. And Arne would come out every single night, because this is the great guy that he was and the legend that he is. He would come out to our booth or whatever, because it was small and it's not like it is today. And we just have a couple of tables, and we're selling Jimmy Snuka shirts and Sergeant Slaughter shirts. And we didn't have a lot to sell back in the day in the merchandise. And he'd come out every single night and say to myself and my best friend, Mike Breen, "Where are you guys staying tonight?" I said, "We have no idea. I mean, this was all new to us, and we're on the road." He goes, "You go here, you tell them I told you to go there, that's where the boys stay, and they'll give you a deal." And you know what? He looked out for both of us, and he looked out for everybody. As we started to roll together, Arne would tell Andre, and Andre, believe me, not a gentle giant, doesn't even come close to what a great guy he was. But because who he was, the giant, and people came to him and they wanted things from him and wanted a picture and all, he was an observer and he waited. And once you were invited into his company, now you were his friend. Arne, you know, introduced me to Andre, and we went from there.
Now, I understand he called you Timber. Is that correct?
And there's a reason for that, because Andre, we used to, like, after the shows, and he knew everyone all around the world and had friends that ran bars and restaurants. And we'd go out and we'd have a few libations after the night. And no one, believe me, no one could drink with him. He left more dead bodies in his wake than I could even tell you. And I drank with him, but not like he did. And after I have a few, I get a little woozy. And his hand was like about 40 pounds. And when he saw me kind of getting off, he go, "Timber," and he hit me with that hand, and I chewed down 3 bar stools and hit the floor. And he started calling me Timber after that. So that's the way Timber came up.
What was it like traveling with that guy? I mean, he was just constant attention everywhere he went. Could probably never get any kind of peace of mind. Did it ever stop?
It never stopped. And it was so hard for him, because we go to hotel rooms and the shower's up to his, to his waistline. And the beds weren't good. And he went through, but let me tell you, he never complained. If he had a mouthful of shit, he wouldn't say so. I mean, he was just, and it made it easy for me. Although it was a little tough because a lot of people, they don't respect people's privacy or anything. You know how it goes when you're a celebrity and they just keep coming. And I did the best I could with him, but it was just me and him. And there wasn't a team of security, and we got through it okay. And you know what? We loved each other. So it was easy to go through.
Hey, what was it like? What was a normal night of drinking? Not any kind of record-setting things. I've heard 119 beers, 127 beers, 156, and all seemingly half-assed legit. But just on a normal night out, what would the Giant go through?
You know, it was different every night. And, you know, he started, in the morning, we'd go to breakfast and had some wine. And then later in the day, he'd have a couple of beers. Then went back to wine in the locker rooms. And then all of a sudden, whatever he felt like drinking. So I've never seen anyone, drink like that. And I never will. And no one else will either. He brought some of these big badasses in the locker room. I'm going to drink with the Giant tonight. They were raising the white flag the next day, and Andre made them come out for a second day. So they learned their lesson.
Hey, what kind of? I heard Andre was a big ribber. Well, when he really liked you, he would get to thinking. He was a deep thinker, and like you said, he observed a lot of things. Tell some stories about Andre as a ribber.
Well, it was a quiet rib. I mean, here's a guy that came from France and learned all the languages on his own, pretty much, was the face of wrestling, professional wrestling for many years. His ribs were so quiet, they didn't even know they were being ribbed. It was fantastic. I said, you're a genius. They don't even know you're ribbing them.
I heard one time, this isn't a rib, but I heard one time he got on an airplane late, and he was sitting in first class. And, anytime you sit somewhere in an airplane, you always assume that the cargo space up there in the overhead bin, that the one that is right over your seat, that is seemingly yours. Well, Andre got on the airplane late, and somebody had stuffed all their stuff where he was going to put his stuff. So, he just kind of, with one hand, just started plucking everything out and driving it in the aisle. He put his stuff in and just sat down. And, of course, nobody was going to say a goddamn thing because the guy weighed 500 pounds, and he was just gargantuan. So he thought that space was his and his space only, and nobody said a damn thing to him.
And he did that every time we got on a flight.
Oh, so that was every time. That was
every single time. That bends to me.
Did anybody ever complain?
He wasn't being selfish, but think about it, because these pre-boarders and all that stuff, it's weird on airplanes because everyone wants to get their bags up and all that. But he took it off, and it was the funniest thing I ever, the first time it happened. I said, he just took the bags out, dropped them in the middle of the aisle, put his bag up. I put my bag up, we closed the thing, we ordered a couple of screwdrivers, and we waited, and then the flight attendant said, can someone claim these bags? And they were scared shit, they wouldn't come down and claim their bags.
Hey, I was reading some stories all last night and the day before. I'd never heard this, but I'd read that because it was so hard for Andre to travel, and so when Arnold Skolin was traveling with Andre, and you were, it was to help facilitate the process because this guy was so big that it was hard for him to drive or probably couldn't drive a normal car. And so one of the stories I read was that Vince, or maybe it was Vince Sr., had a trailer built that Andre would travel in. Was there any truth to that? Because I had never heard that until I read it.
No. Vince Jr., and we had a customized van made in Long Island. And we used to travel on that along. And then to make life easy for my friend, I had a book where I rented vans and whatnot because he just couldn't fit in. He couldn't fit in a dock.
Could he drive a car because of the steering wheel situation and the gas pedals and everything? Could he actually even drive?
No, not when I got with him. He was too big. He couldn't. No way. And to watch him. Let me tell you, the stretch limousines, what a waste of time for him. he'd say, forget it. We'll take a taxi, van taxi, because it was so uncomfortable. He couldn't fit. You know, he just couldn't fit. And he went through so much shit, Dave. It was unbelievable. And he never said nothing. He always had a smile on his face. He treated everyone well. Like I said, he loved the locker room. That was his family. He took care of business in there.
But I heard that when Andre didn't like somebody, and this is another story I heard. And before I take care of a little bit of business, I want to get this last story in. There was a story that when Rick Rude and Jake the Snake were tag teaming against Andre and his partner, I guess Jake had a lot of heat with Andre. And Andre would get Jake down on the mat and stand. You know, Jake kind of had that long stringy hair. And right. Andre would stand on either side of his head and be standing right on his hair. And he would just grab his arms and just wrench him up. And, you know, Jake's looking at Rick like, please, please tag in so this summit will quit torturing me. Was there any right. truth to that?
Absolutely. Because probably, and I can't speak for Andre, of course, but if you were screwing up, you didn't respect the business, or your outside activities were involving the business, he would go in the ring, and he wasn't a violent guy at all, like I said. But there were certain guys that thought they could get away with stuff, and he told him, get out of the locker room. And when he got him in the ring, they understood who was running the business.
Hey, how strong was Andre? I mean, I know he didn't really work out, but just with just that natural body power, he could do basically anything and everything he wanted at any time, correct?
That's correct. You know what? He never worked out. I mean, we did after he had his back surgery in England. Here's a funny story for you. He was living at the Stanford Hyatt Regency or something, and every day I used to pick him up, and we'd go to Vince's house. Vince's gym at his house in Greenwich is probably his biggest, most gold, most gyms. And just to get him rehabbing from his back surgery, and Vince would come, I'd see Vince in the morning, and he goes, beautiful. And Andre's working out. He's feeling better, and everything's good and all that. And then Vince would go in for a workout, and we'd go to the kitchen and start drinking beer, and it's about 9 in the morning. Vince would come out of the gym and look and go, Jesus Christ, what the hell? It's like a, fertility. But Andre did go, and he didn't work out much. He didn't have to work out much. I mean, goddamn, he's a giant. And just his body weight and mass, no one could really touch him.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Pluto TV is playing the biggest movies every night this summer for free. Watch hit movies like The Matrix, G.I. Joe Retaliation, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Scary Movie, Runaway Bride, and more all summer long. Check out the biggest stars like The Rock, Keanu Reeves, Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and more. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of free TV channels in English and Spanish featuring TV shows, news, sports, comedy, and more all for free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device, including Android and Apple smartphones. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
Coming back in with Tim White, we've been talking a long time here for about refereeing and some Andre stories. Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd. I remember that match well. What did Andre think of Big John Studd?
Well, I have to tell you, the reports that they had heat, they did. And when John Studd came into business and stepped over the top rope and declared he was a giant, so there was some heat. But they eventually in the business, they settled their ways. And Studd, apologized to him and he worked with him. So it was a good at the finish of WrestleMania the money match and all that. They were on good terms then, but there was a lot of friction and a lot of heat before that because he was a giant too. And yeah, there was only one giant, believe me.
Andre was, he drew so much attention. I know he loved to play cards. I know he loved to drink. What other kind of hobbies did he have, just to relax or have a good time?
You know, first of all, he really, when you were in his circle, he loved people, and he loved being around people. And he would make himself the brunt of jokes and act the goof and do things, but he ate. Let me tell you something. When it came to women, he put them on a pedestal. He treated them, if there was a woman around, you know, he was just a good man. And he loved life. But other than the road, which we were on the road 300 plus days a year, and he was never left alone, but we really enjoyed when we used to go back down to his ranch and, we'd ride the ATVs around, and he loved the animals. He actually I don't know what it cost him, but he had a huge ranch in Ellerby, and he put up a fence all around the ranch so that the hunters couldn't kill the deer. Whatever livestock or animals or free animals were on his property, he didn't want them killed. He loved his dogs. He loved his horses. He raised Texas Longhorns. He just really, when you got to know him, which was tough for him because, like we said, with that celebrity, you can't hide from anyone. But you know what? He had a lot of fun. And the people that were closest to him, we'd go out and just have a great time. And it was hard for him to have a normal, and I'm not saying he wasn't normal, but he wanted the same stuff we all do. Just be happy, be around friends. He had a beautiful girlfriend, Val, that he was so in love with. But things didn't work out. But that's the way life's a big, it's crazy, isn't it?
You know, I met Andre, I think it was probably around 92-ish, whenever he came in. For some reason, he came down to WCW for a time, for an appearance, and he was, this is at the time when he was on crutches. I was working a Stunning Steve Austin. He'd come in. He was pretty, you know, beat down. He was kind of bent over, and I could tell he was in a lot of pain. But, man, when he walked through the door, this is the first and only time I ever got a chance to meet Andre the Giant. So I went up to him, and I said, Andre, I said, my name's Stunning Steve Austin. I just wanted to say hello. And, you know, he was in a bad mood. He was in pain, and he shook my hand. But I'll never forget it because I love hearing old Andre the Giant stories because, that guy, was, if not the biggest draw in the history of the business, one of the top three and an absolute legend. And anybody in the business just is just in awe of the guy and loves to hear Andre's stories because he was such a character and such a fun-loving guy. You know, as you've said, and, through all your travels with him. But going back to you, Timmy, before we wrap this up, you got any regrets? Anything with your career in the business of professional wrestling? Anything you didn't
Absolutely
get to accomplish?
Not, Steve.
There was anything you wanted to accomplish but didn't get a chance to?
Well, when I first met Vince, I was on the list to go to the FBI school when I graduated college, and that was my dream and my goal. And now I have friends that are in the Secret Service and FBI, and they said, you are the luckiest bastard alive. You got to travel around the world, work with those guys, get in that ring at Madison Square Garden and the pay-per-views. You are lucky, and I'm a lucky guy. I really am. I just like I said, life's crazy. Things work out.
Hey, what do you think these days, the work style in the ring has changed a little bit? It's a quicker, fast-paced product, and everything has changed. I mean, the game of football, the baseball, hockey, everything has changed. What's your take on, I mean this in a positive way, just on work style maybe 15 years ago versus work style today?
Well, again, like I said, we're in the electronic business now, and you got to tell the story in 5 minutes instead of 10, and it doesn't. And it, in my opinion, it's so hard to do for the young talent, and you know that. And you need to tell a story, and you need to have the spots and make it work so the fans will enjoy it and all that instead of this speed up stuff. And it's funny now that after all these years in the business that I'm seeing all these second generation kids come in, and they're all excellent, and they grew up in the business, and I'm wishing them the best. But it's kind of tough. It's tough. And I mean, you know what you went through to make it through, and you were one of the greatest superstars they ever had. It's tough, and now you really don't get the time, do you?
You know, it is tough, and the lay of the land is so different these days. All the territories are gone. There's not really any places to get consistent end-time ring in front of a crowd with a great opponent or a veteran opponent that you can actually learn from, a guy who's maybe been in the business 10 or 15 years to help teach, help train you. But it is what it is, and I still love the business today. I always will, as you. But sometimes, you know, when you watch and guys are trying to work so fast and hard because, you know, they're trying their hardest. But like, to your point,
I know.
Not enough time to tell that story. And it's a very it's hard to be in the boots that these young men and women are in these days. It's very tough.
Absolutely. I feel for them because I've seen some guys with unbelievable talent, but they just won't let them loose. Well, hopefully they groom them and they recognize that talent, but you don't have much time anymore. And you know what, Steve? I think you two, what was it, in Milwaukee at a, that's when you came up with Austin 316.
Yeah, King of the Ring in 96.
Yeah, and that was in Milwaukee, wasn't it?
Yeah, Milwaukee to Mecca.
Oh, you just fucking, you know what? No one wrote that script for you.
No, man, I got out of that ambulance, and I just got my lips stitched up from when Mark Merrill kicked me in the mouth.
Yeah,
and then there was Doc Hendricks there to tell me what happened. And if he had never told me what happened about Jake cutting a religious promo, I would have never been able to come up with my promo right there on the spot because I never would have heard about it. So I fluked into that, and I got lucky.
Well, there you go. But did that change the business? That's like Brett and Sean, and there's defining moments in that business. And then it lasts, and that was your day. You just turned the page right there.
Hey, a couple of quick questions before we leave. When you, all the time you spent in the ring, just give me a couple of guys who you really looked up to as far as performance in the ring. And I think you just mentioned two of them. And whether you like them or not, and I know you do, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, two of the best ever. Who else impressed you in the ring, mechanically or ring general or in any standpoint from a technical matter then?
Well, it was funny. Earl Hebner was number one, and I was number two. So I was always doing the ICC, the Intercontinental Championship thing. And believe me, I loved working with Razor.
Yep, Razor was good.
He was damn good. And I loved working with Triple H. That's where he was because I forgot who was on top then, but we went through matches. I had a blast with Triple H. I really did.
One of the things
one
I
of
liked
the funniest
about
matches ever was we did a match with him and Henry Godwin. He used to bring that bucket of shit out there, and the thing fell over, and it was rolling across the ring like the blob. And the guys, we were laughing our ass. They changed their match to like half of the ring. But, you know, I've had a lot of great times. Ric Flair, and let me say this, one of the nicest guys, greatest guys, a legend in the business. I love him to death. And I didn't get to work with him much. I probably did one of his matches, maybe two. But Ric and going all the way from Chief J, Mr. Fuji, Brett, the Hitman, Taker, I mean, Triple H, Razor, Shawn, everybody, and most of in yourself. What a pleasure it was being in the ring with you. We had some great matches together, and I remember sometimes, well, you stunned me pretty hard, Steve. I'm a little pissed off.
Hey, most of the time when I hit somebody with a stunner, it was a work. When it was you, it was a shoot every time.
It was a shoot because, you know, when like they said, I have this crazy strength, and so you better put me down or you're gonna be in a fight forever.
I remember one time when we were working in Philly. It was WrestleMania 15. I was working against The Rock, and there was a right. bunch of shenanigans going on in that match. I was going through a damn divorce. I'd forgot my ring vest. I had to wear a T-shirt to the ring. I was madder than a hornet about that. All kinds of referees involved. Mike Chioda, who's a hell of a referee in his own right, comes in.
Oh,
I crack
great.
At some bitch right in the head with the steel chair. You come in. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Come through the ring. Rock hits you with the rock bottom. You go thundering down. How was that rock bottom at WrestleMania 15 from The Rock?
It was perfect. It was like landing on a pillow. He squared me up. He put me down. It was good. And
the crowd popped like a sumbitch on that.
Well, I'll tell you. when we first got together at the production meeting, they said, Steve's going to hit you with a chair. I said, I'm not getting hit with a chair. I can't do it. They said, are you kidding? It's WrestleMania. I said, no, I just can't do it. I'll take anything else, but I just don't like it. I've never been hit with a chair. You know, I was on the hold train for like 2 years. All I had to do was dance.
But you know that, and that's a good call because nobody really gives a shit about getting hit by a steel chair. I'm taking my
and
share.
I know
of
the adrenaline's popping, and yeah. I'm not used to it. You guys are, man. You guys are the toughest bastards in the world. I can't take a jet, and I just kind of balked at it, but I went with the thing.
Hey, that's a smart call. I wouldn't hold that against you at all. And people always ask me, hey, those steel chairs really hurt? Yeah, they really hurt.
Do
they hurt?
Hurt
like a motherfucker.
What are you kidding me? They think they're like foam chairs or something.
Hey,
no,
I tried to take
no,
care.
No.
I tried to take care of Kyoto with that chair, but I caught him a little bit far on. I kind of wrap that thing around it from the front.
Let me tell you something. Kyoto's the new generation. He's a terrific kid. I loved him since him and Joey Morella came into the business. I've been around a long time, and God bless Joey. And Mike's done a wonderful job, and he's a great referee. He gets it. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, one last thing before I keep thinking of this stuff. Back in the day, when did you guys finally start wearing earbuds?
God, I don't know how many years ago, but that cost JBL his big push at Madison Square Garden.
What happened?
Well, it was a Survivor Series, and it was at teams of four or five or whatever, but there was a bunch of finishes, a bunch of moves. And but anyway, you know, JBL's supposed to win the whole deal. And somehow, and they always see, here's the thing with the refereeing one. They did the air plugs and all that. You're so distracted. It's unbelievable. And you're trying to make the match look like it makes sense or, you know, be a referee, but they're screaming in your ear. Get them to the hot camera section. Get them over to that
stop
corner.
Right there, Tim. Stop right there, Tim. What I'm talking about, people, to not everybody that knows, for a long time, the referees just were out there refereeing the match, and they were just going accordingly,
yep.
And they still were. But then technology started coming around, and they would give them an earpiece just to for a little bit of direction or instruction or hey, go check on somebody. They don't control
right.
the match, but sometimes for positioning, they might give them a cue. So when all that's going down, you got somebody screaming in your ear to do this, and I've been in those
right.
shoes because I've worn those things before doing some of my shows on television. When you have all this background noise, sometimes you can't hear nothing. And so they're screaming in your ears, but the crowd is so loud, everything gets discombobulated. So continue with your story.
It's unbelievable, but to cut it to the chase. Bradshaw gets rolled up by Savio Vega, and they're screaming at me about something else. I went down and hit one, two, and I hit the three, but he kicked out. Now you're in the middle of a pay-per-view at Survivor Series in Madison Square Garden. Bradshaw looked at me like, what? I said, what are you going to do, stop the match now? I screwed up. So that was probably the worst day of my life. And Bradshaw was very kind to me and everyone backstage. I just, for a brief moment, I lost what I was doing, and I hit the three. And then now it was really odd. You know, it was really weird because the guy that was supposed to go over is out of the match. So they're changing on the fly. Talk about screaming in the airpiece. It was that was a tough day.
Tough day at the office. Hey, we had a good time sitting here talking with Tim White, referee, longtime referee with WWE, a very good friend of mine, a guy who I always love reffing my matches, had a great chemistry with, and a guy who got a chance to travel the world with Andre the Giant, the one and only Andre the Giant, who was inducted into Hall of Fame in 1993 when WWF created a Hall of Fame, and he was the only inductee that year. Tim, I want to thank you for coming on the Steve Austin Show. I appreciate your time, and thanks for talking to me and sharing a few Andre stories.
Well, yeah, Steve, it's my pleasure, and as always, I miss you. I wish if you get back in the ring again, I'll get in shape. I'll referee the match.
You got a plan there, mister. You got a plan. We'll see what happens. For Tim White.
All right. Well, and tell Mo that I said thank you, and hopefully the show was good.
You got it, Timmy. I appreciate you coming on the show. Until the next time, folks, on the Steve Austin Show, this is me, Steve Austin, live and living audio, saying I'll catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Hey man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy, Big Brother Jake, a.k.a. Jake Warner.
My government name.
Check it out. I host a show called The Big Brother Jake Podcast, and I've taken my talents to the biggest and baddest platform on the planet. That's right, baby, Podcast One. My show is unique as I talk about everything, life, sports, entertainment, being a single dad juggling several jobs. I'm a hot mess, but it's damn entertaining. Subscribe and review now on Apple Podcasts and listen on Podcast One or wherever you get your podcasts.